Welcome everybody to Take Time. This morning I'm delighted to have Owen Lewis from Sport Wales, Assistant Director of Sports System Strategy and Services. Owen and I are going to have a conversation and we're going to just sort of see where things go, and we hope that you take a lot from that. So Owen, could you just give me a little bit of a feel for your role and remit at Sport Wales? Because I know we've had a lot of changes, so it'd be good to sort of start from a base.
Yeah, hi Claire. So just to start off with my role, so responsibility for strategy, and I played a role in developing the Sport Wales strategy, and I feel like that was almost the easy part, and I think now really bringing that strategy to life and making sure Sport Wales plays its role on delivering the vision for the sector, I think is the really challenging bit, actually. So we've all seen strategies that sit on a shelf. That's not what we want out of this one. We really want it to be a living thing. And that's the focus of my role, really, is how do we as Sport Wales stay true to our strategy and use it with the purpose of delivering against the vision for a sector. And then the services element of my role. So my background has been in performance sport and in science and medicine. So I also oversee the Sport Wales Institute, and utilising those services, again, towards that sector purpose and sector vision, and how we can make use of science and medicine to really deliver against that.
Not a small role then.
Keeps me busy.
So today, what I really want to focus the conversation around is equality, diversity and inclusion. So what I would like to know sort of from you is, when and why did you start to further explore sort of those three topics?
Yeah. So the when is basically since the new year. So since around Christmas time into January, I started looking at what Sport Wales is doing in that space, better understanding it, and maybe shaping what it could look like in the future. I guess I came into it with the idea that I don't want to be Mr. ED&I. So I don't want to be the person who does all this. I want to be the person who helps other people make this a part of what they do, and a natural day-to-day part. So it's not something additional. And that's a challenge, but it's one I'm really keen to take on and explore. And I see such an obvious connection now that, to be honest, I didn't see before I started looking more closely, between diversity and inclusion leading to equality and the approach that Sport Wales sets out in its strategy. So the approach in Sport Wales strategy talks about understanding people's needs, and really also understanding the diversity of people's needs, and then being able to co-create and deliver solutions that really address those needs. And it got me thinking, if I'm being honest with myself, how often do we as Sport Wales and me as a person, how often do I really understand people's needs? And even when I do that, do I really understand diversity of people's needs, or do I just understand the need of the people who are sort of immediately in front of me? And I found it really difficult to be able to answer that question positively, because if I'm being honest with myself, the answer is no. I think sometimes we've got a good approximation of people's needs. When it comes to really understanding diversity of need, I think often we're not really close to that. And again, talking about the strategy as a living thing, it got me thinking that, well, we can't espouse this approach and not actually live it. So for me, that connection between diversity and need and what do you do to be inclusive about that and the approach that we set out in our strategy was so strong that it just made sense to learn more.
Okay, so you sort of finished off there saying about learning more. So you talked about, you know, starting this sort of exploring topics in a little bit more depth from the new year. What have you specifically done yourself to do that? So you've talked about sort of the strategy, but then you talked about, you know, being honest with yourself and what you've noticed within how you might have approached doing your job previously. So what is it that you've done to help you learn and broaden your thoughts and widen your thinking around that?
Yeah, great question. I think the first thing I did would make a start. So I'm a reader and a podcaster and a video watcher. So I have a bit of a thirst for information. And I'd been sent a couple of articles around ED&I probably 6 months previously to taking on this role around it. And again, if I'm being honest, they sat in my inbox and I hadn't read them and I hadn't looked at them. So I started and I thought, well, I'll read something and see where it takes me. And it really took me on a journey, not to be too cliche about it, but I saw enough things that made me want to read more. I found out about something called the 21-Day Challenge, which was originally focused around race and issues to do with tackling racism and racial inequality, but it's got a far broader general equality perspective than that. And I did the 21-Day Challenge. You know, I read things, I watched things, I went out and experienced things to give me that learning. And it was tough, to be honest. It made me realise that my idea of myself as a good bloke who was non-discriminatory and therefore that was enough was a long way from the truth. And it made me realise how there is a big difference between not being discriminatory, but actually being actively inclusive. And again, you know, that sort of honesty moment, like I couldn't, having read and learned what I did, consider myself as someone who is actively inclusive. And I just don't think I'd realised that before. I think I thought that because I was a nice guy and I wasn't discriminatory, that was enough. And I guess that got me thinking that, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And I'd been sat there in blissful ignorance, if you like. And it gave me a real want to encourage other people and help other people to go on a similar journey and learn a bit about themselves and about what they might do differently as a result.
Thanks for sharing that, Owen. And we'll sort of share the link out to the 21-Day Challenge as well for anyone that wants to sort of have a look at that. So you talked about that change. So how have you changed? If you sort of wanted to pick out on some things, what is it that, you know, in your daily work, practice, thinking that has shifted within you that allows you to kind of look at things a little bit differently or maybe stop and consider another perspective?
I think really connecting back to purpose has been something that I do far more consciously and far more regularly now. And we've got a sector vision that talks about everyone having a lifelong enjoyment of sport. And it gave me, it's given me a real want to test that. So is what we're doing here giving everyone a lifelong enjoyment of sport? So it's kind of given me that that connection, I think, to really take things back to purpose all the time. And it's quite hard to describe, but it just shifts your perspective. So rather than thinking about things now from the perspective of this is serving a narrow purpose and it's doing a good job in space, in that space, I think far more often about what could this do? What could this look like? And almost what are we missing? It's made me think differently, and it's given me confidence, I think, to challenge others' thinking around policy, decision, you know, the sorts of things we do. I think what I'd say here is, because I think it's really important too, is we do so many things with really good intent. And I've certainly done this in the past, you know, with the absolute right intent, just not necessarily aware of some of the unintended consequences that it might cause. And, you know, I'd share two examples if I can, because I think it helps to bring it to life. So as an institute, as a science and medicine institute, you know, we know that there are all sorts of benefits to breaking down the barriers between being injured and being fit and well and training. And as a result of that, you know, some of the changes that we've made in the Institute are to make physio treatment more visible and more part of the environment. So we're discouraging that idea of you go to the physio when you're injured, and then once they fixed you, you come back. So, you know, some real environmental things, literally knocking down a wall so that the physio room isn't a room anymore. And mm-hmm. it's done with good intent, and there's really good benefit to that. But the bit that we need to think more about is that for people of certain backgrounds, that privacy, particularly in vulnerable moments, is really, really important. And I think it's a great example of where we understood need, you know, we understood the need that breaking down that barrier is really important, but we didn't really consider well enough diversity of need, because not everyone has that need, and, you know, different people, different needs. So I hope that's an example that helps to bring it to life. And there are such easy adjustments you can make, you know, I mean, things as simple as a curtain in the ceiling. And, you know, so it doesn't always have to be really difficult to then accommodate diversity of need, but it is really important that you do it. Mm-hmm. And the other example I'd give was around working with Welsh Government on return to sport as COVID regulations were relaxing, and looking at what could be done to encourage more people back to sport as things got slightly easier. And we talked a lot about, well, why don't we relax the regulation around travel so that you don't have to stay local to exercise. It's fine to get in your car and travel to exercise, and, you know, open up exercise more in that way. Mm-hmm. And again, great intent, and would have helped a lot of people. But what if you haven't got a car? And actually, you know, lots of people from more disadvantaged backgrounds don't have a car, don't have access to a car. And actually, they're inadvertently, we're perpetuating inequality, because we're only making those regulations in practice applicable to people who are lucky enough to have a car. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, nothing wrong with the intent and nothing wrong with the idea and potentially nothing wrong with the solution. But what are we doing to cater for that real diversity of need for those people that don't have a car? And what is it that we could do about that?
Two really great examples, Owen. And one of the words you used I'm really interested in there was around intent and sort of the good intent. So with you and, you know, sort of very much focused from Take Time's point of view on the individuals and what we can do ourselves, and then what we can do to encourage those around us to think differently and to sort of help each other grow. So we've got that good intent. How do we check and challenge and broaden our awareness around that intent to know that there might be another perspective, there might be a blind spot that we have that is stopping us from maybe opening up services in a different way? You know, what are you doing yourself? What are you doing, you know, with colleagues to look at that? Or is it something that we've not looked at yet?
I think it's something we are looking at. I don't think it's something that we've cracked, and I'm not sure it's the sort of thing that you ever crack. But I tie it back into something I said earlier, which is understanding need and really understanding diversity of need. And I think for me, that's been a really good challenge and checkpoint is, whose needs is this intervention or this program, whose needs is it based on? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess a good way of challenging yourself easily on that is just looking, you know, so who's informed this? Mm-hmm. And I think there are layers to that, you know, if that's something that three policymakers have sat in a room on themselves and come up with, then that isn't considering need. If it's something that's informed by an immediate group of beneficiaries, then that is based on need. But I think that's the stage where we start challenging. You know, I think that's almost the most difficult spot, is that you can base programs based on the needs of people who are already engaged in them. Mm-hmm. And you can do a really good job of that with really good intent. But how diverse is that need? And I think really challenging on where has that understanding of need come from, I think will force us to think differently about the sort of programs that we offer.
Brilliant, thank you. And it's one of those things about thinking differently, and the word that comes into my head, and I know sort of through Take Time we've talked about it quite a lot, is around vulnerability. You know, sort of stepping into something where, you know, like you said at the beginning of here, you discovered things about yourself where your intent was there, and you know you're a good guy and you're going out to do the very best you can within your environment, but then discovering that that might not have enabled those who wanted to get involved. So that vulnerability, you know, how does that feel to you? Is that something that you've experienced? Do you think it's got a role to play within this area?
I mean, it's a great point to raise. I think it is a huge barrier, if I'm being honest. And I think I'm overcoming it, but not overcome it yet. You know, it's easy to pretend I can be vulnerable. In practice, it's far more difficult when, you know, potentially if you're in a leadership position and people are looking at you, or I think whatever position you're in, the idea of not knowing, getting things wrong, is quite tough. And I think it applies at a lot of levels. You know, certainly from my perspective, I felt personally vulnerable from the learning I did, because it made me realize that things that I'd done in the past with really good intent, at best didn't make a difference, and at worst possibly made the problem worse. So that's a personal vulnerability that I think is probably the easiest to deal with. I think the two other levels of vulnerability that I'd really encourage people to think about is trying things differently without knowing whether they're going to work or not. And how many times do we genuinely do that? Like, how many times are we prepared to try something because we just need to try something different and not have to have, you know, shaped it to the degree where we're trying something different, but we really already know what the result is because we're not prepared to try something that won't work. Mm-hmm. So I think being vulnerable enough to do that is really important. And I think probably the hardest element of vulnerability is that admission that we don't hold the answers. So I guess, again, it's kind of how we're conditioned to think in work, isn't it? Is, you know, we'll go out and collect some insight, and then we'll bring it in and we'll analyze it and we'll come up with the answer, because that's what we do. You know, we're good people, we're clever people, we'll know the answer. And the reality is, in, I think in all spaces, but particularly in this diverse space, is the answers lie elsewhere. You know, the answers for engaging more diverse communities or people from different backgrounds lie with those people. And we can co-create them and we can facilitate them, but they're not ours. And I think it makes sense, but it's still quite difficult to be comfortable with that. And I think it does leave us feeling quite vulnerable. I'm trying to kind of unpick, why does it make me feel vulnerable? And I suppose it's that idea of not being in control of it. And that is quite tough. But I suppose to think of it from the other perspective, we've approached it in the way of, we're going to come up with the answers and have the control, and we haven't really made a difference. So we have to be brave enough, I think, to be vulnerable and accept that there's got to be answers elsewhere that we're just not the ones to come up with.
Owen, really interested to sort of pick up there, and you talked about doing things differently. So in your mind, what would be useful for us to sort of do differently going forward?
I think it's somehow making a distinction between taking action, which we have to do, but having the solution, which I don't think we can get to. And I don't think there's a single action any of us could individually take, or we could take as organizations, that is the solution here. So I think we've got to get comfortable. And again, it ties into the vulnerability point and the lack of control point, that the action that we need to take is not going to be the solution, but can we take actions that make it more likely that solutions will emerge and will show themselves and will be able to be implemented? But I think we've got to resist that urge to think we're going to dive to the solution here because we're the controllers and we know what that is. So I suppose a good way of thinking differently is if we can get comfortable with the fact that we can't come up with a solution, what action can we take that will make it more likely that that solution will arise, even if it arises from others?
Brilliant. And just sort of a follow-up from that. So when we're talking about inclusivity, you know, as a general practice in our work, so not even just focusing on these topics of equality and diversity, just as a way of approaching work, what's your thoughts on that about, you know, really pausing for thought on, you know, what's my intent? We talked about good intent. So what's my intent here? Is it to make an action because I feel like action is progress and I'm comfortable with action? How do you sort of, I suppose, balance that in your own thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, to a degree, we're all rewarded by action, aren't we? We're rewarded by the actions that we take. And ultimately, we're rewarded by the impact that those actions make. And I don't think we can ignore that. But I think we need to challenge ourselves really hard on, you know, what impact are we expecting from these actions here? And think about it logically, you know, if we could come up with an action that was the solution to this, wouldn't we have done it by now? You know, this isn't a new issue. You know, it's something that we've been grappling with. So how do we change our mindset to be comfortable that action isn't always the solution? Sometimes action is enabling others to be able to come up with their own solutions.
Owen, what I can sort of hear from what you're saying there is there's quite a lot of reflection in, you know, sort of what's gone on for yourself while you've been sort of taking a deeper dive, I suppose, into some of these areas. So is reflective practice a sort of a big part of your day? And actually within this specific space, has it played a key part in helping you move forward?
Yeah, again, that's a really good question. I think I'm a reflector by personality or makeup, if you like, rather than by mechanism. So I'm not sure reflective practice in the sense of structured, this is how you approach it. I couldn't honestly sit here and say that I do that on a regular basis. I do engage with it because I find it really useful, but I think I reflect probably more naturally than that. By just looking backwards. Yeah, I'm a big believer in understanding things through hindsight. And I think some of that comes from the performance sport world. You know, you'll see an athlete excel on the world stage and another athlete not excel on the world stage. And your predictive power to say which one of them is likely to excel and which one is not. It's not really that great. I think we convince ourselves it is, but it's not really that great. But when you get to the end and you look back, you can really make sense of why that's happened. And I think actually, conversely, that gives us the idea that our predictive power is really good because we just pretend that we always knew that. But for me, that's how I see reflective practice, is that idea of learning as a result of what's happened. And really using that hindsight to understand, well, what could we try next then? What might work here and what could we try?
That kind of brings us full circle back to sort of the beginning when you said that realization of, you know, what has been done previously at best has made a difference to a few, and maybe at worst has sort of stopped others. So sort of learning from that now and taking that step forward. Really interested to know if you could sort of pick out 2-3 books, articles, blogs, things that really made you stop and think. Would you be able to sort of share those with us? And crucially, why? What was it that was the key takeaway from that?
I think so to answer your question, Claire, I would say look at the 21 Day Challenge, find something in there that piques your interest, and see where that leads you. Because I think my approach in this was quite scattergun, but I think that was a benefit. I wouldn't want to say to people, go read this and it'll make the difference, because I think you've sort of got to find that for yourself. So I would say start, go on that 21-day challenge, find something that looks interesting and start there and see where it takes you. To slightly contradict what I've just said there, I think two things that I would really encourage people to read are the Lived Experiences Racing Sport report that's recently been published. And for me, the personal story shared in that really connected and made me feel, I guess, like a combination of sad, angry, how can this happen? And it gave me that kind of emotional connection. And what that made me do actually was relook at the data report. Because I'm not a data guy, so data on its own doesn't really float my boat. But having read those lived experiences and then revisited the data report, if you look at the data inequality, you can't ignore that. And especially when you then connect that to what it makes people experience on the ground. For me, the combination of those two was really, really powerful. And that at the moment is giving me a lot of motivation and drive to want to try things differently here. But I genuinely wouldn't say go and read this or go and watch this, because I think you've got to find what connects for you, but you've got to start.
Brilliant, Owen. I think that's a brilliant sort of note for us to sort of close the conversation on. So we'll share the links to the 21-day challenge so you can have a little explore around that, and obviously the links to the Race and Sport review if you've not discovered those yet. So Owen, thanks ever so much for your time today and for sort of sharing your story over the last year, and sort of looking forward to seeing how things develop as we go forward. So thank you.
Pleasure. Thanks, Claire.